The following is Sarah Barrett's talk, IA in a Complex Business Context, from the 2015 Information Architecture Summit.
Hello. I'm going to talk to you about regrets and some things that I regret, which I recognize is kind of the opposite of what you're supposed to do up here. I think this is the space for the My Fabulous Career talks. But I want to talk to you about those regrets because we managed to fix a lot of those things that went wrong, and it managed to turn this project into one of the things I've worked on that I'm really most proud of. It's not flashy or sexy, but I think it does get at why IA matters and why it is we all do what we do. So why a complex business context? Basically because when it's simple, you can get away with a lot. When you understand the business and the client understands design, you can get away with just doing high quality work and being a generally lovely person, and it'll all work out. That's not as true when the business gets complex. So when I started doing research for this, I started looking at a lot of advice about how to manage difficult projects and how to work with clients and that kind of thing. And a lot of the advice is about personality, what you as a person can do to ease a project. So a lot of this advice is stuff like smile at people, ask your clients about their weekend, modulate your tones, and please, yes, do all of those things. That's act like a normal, pleasant person. That's a good idea. Even if you want to, as I've seen advised, go out of your way to cultivate charm and charisma. I think that's all fine. But that's not what gets you to successful outcomes. Process does. In the fall of 2013, I started working on a project where we really needed that process to work for us. It was for an internal portal for a personal insurance company that was used all day, every day by the underwriters at that company to find the information they needed to do their jobs. Our IA work was part of a larger replatforming. We were partnered with some SharePoint specialists. We're moving to SharePoint 2013. The experience they had, even though everybody had to use it all day, was really difficult to use, impossible to find anything, and horribly difficult to manage. It was one person's job, poor Brad, it was his entire job, even though it wasn't supposed to be. And it was maintained entirely by hand in static pages, which is one of the reasons why it was so awful. It was maintained in FrontPage. I actually had to go look this up. The most recent version of FrontPage is from 2003. 2003 was a really long time ago. Mel Gibson won a People's Choice Award in 2003. Some things have changed since then. But the site hadn't. It just gotten bigger and messier and made poor Brad's life worse each day. So we really needed to help them. A little bit of Underwriting 101 for those of you who don't know. I didn't when I started the project. Most of what underwriters do, and this is a gross oversimplification, but a lot of what they do is figure out whether new policies the company is going to write are in line with all of the rules and guidelines. Does the driver for the auto insurance policy have a good record? If it's a home insurance policy, does the pool have the right kind of fence around it? And then once claims are made on those policies, they make sure that the claims are all above board and again within the lines. And really when you think about it, both of those tasks are almost 100% about finding the right information and figuring out whether it applies to your situation. When you're doing that in an interface for 8 hours a day, IA matters a lot. And when you're working in a pretty native SharePoint environment, it's kind of all you have. So we got going on our project, and we started it with user research. We really pride ourselves on our rigorous user research process, and I do believe in that. But a thing we noticed pretty early on is that all the rigor of that process was actually letting us make mistakes without realizing why they had happened. We were doing a large cohort and trying to ask them very consistent questions and doing a more formal presentation after it. And that was letting us miss things because we were talking to experts. The underwriters spent their entire day doing this. They really knew their business and they did not speak our language. They spoke their own language that had nothing to do with us. And doing 15-hour-long interviews, one after the other after the other, wasn't giving us a chance to regroup and figure out where we'd messed up and try and figure out how to fix it. One example, the word action is a word that can really easily come up in user research. You know, somebody's looking at a page and they say, oh, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to click on this? And you say, oh, just do whatever you normally would, take any action you want. And in this case, they would stop short. They would say, action. I couldn't take an action here. If I wanted to take an action, I'd have to, and they would be off. And it was really hard to pull them back and actually have the rest of that interview happen. Turns out, didn't know this, action has a really specific meaning in insurance. There's all kinds of regulations around it. And we couldn't use that word without disrupting an entire interview. And that was lucky because that was one of the ones that we saw right away. There were lots of subtler mistakes that I realized later where we just hadn't gotten the information. We didn't know what they were telling us because we didn't have that context. So in order to fix this, what we decided to do was make our process more iterative. Instead of doing one big block of user research, we did several smaller blocks, fewer participants, and regrouped with the client, with Brad, after each one of those. We went over what we had asked, ran over what we had found, asked all of our stupid questions and got them out of the way because we had only talked to a few people, it was still all right. We hadn't built too much on it. And then we made him and his colleagues go through and actually answer the questions that we were going to ask the next set of participants. Again, get that language, get all those stupid questions out of the way. This let us learn a lot about their language and their business really quickly. It also, very importantly for this kind of user, whether it's insurance or not, let us ask much better questions because we could get really specific because we knew their language, we knew their business, we knew it was important. So instead of just saying, it looks like one of your tasks is to find information about an auto policy, show me how you would do that. We could watch them and say, oh, I noticed for a new car, you looked by line of business first. How would that change if the car was from 1960? All right. What if it wasn't kept in a garage, but was somebody's primary vehicle? Is that different in California? Because we knew that those things mattered to them and we could get at those little nuances that we needed to really make the IA work. It's important to remember here that experts can't explain all of the things that make their process to them. They can't see that forest. You have to know how to ask about the trees. We all say we want to learn in our process, but it's really easy to get boxed in by the decisions you make really early. This kind of iteration lets you make those small mistakes without ignoring them and letting them turn into large mistakes. And also, working with the client in this kind of iterative way makes the process theirs as much as it's yours. It lets you build a shared vocabulary around what you're doing and why. And I think the key to a shared vocabulary that gets ignored sometimes is that, especially with non-designers, the vocabulary has to be theirs, not yours. We didn't make them learn about mental models, we learned about insurance. In one meeting after we had kind of rejiggered this process and had learned a lot more about what they were doing, I asked Brad a clarifying question about something, and his first response was to laugh, which is a little bit disconcerting. And then he turned to one of his colleagues and said, they speak insurance, which was very flattering. But the really great part was that then he turned back and gave me exactly the information I needed to move forward, and we could understand it. So we started prototyping, which was the next step in our process, did some user research, the technical stakeholders, the SharePoint architect put together a sitemap and we were going to prototype about it. This was excruciating to work on. It's one of the worst things I've ever had to do. And it was really because the path forward wasn't clear. I didn't know what we were supposed to be doing really and I didn't feel confident in any decision I was making. And presenting it was a terrible feeling for a perfectionist like me. And it was interesting because the client didn't react negatively in any of those ways you might expect. They didn't reject it, they didn't get angry, but they did all of those other things that are really good signs of a client kind of rejecting a deliverable. They started asking questions that had nothing to do with this. They started proposing solutions that had nothing to do with the deliverable at hand. Things that we thought had been approved weeks ago came back up. All of those things that derail a meeting mean a client's not on board, and all of that happened here. But it got approved. You know, we did all of the things that you're supposed to do. We were articulate, and we talked about our vision and where it was going and our design rationale. And at the end of that meeting, the deliverable was approved, and the client was smiling. But that didn't make it right. We needed to stop, so we hit the brakes and tried to figure out what we had done wrong, what was wrong with our process. And we decided that we had done too much at once. So we retooled our process to make sure that we were designing one thing at a time. Because we realized that the client might agree, but they were never going to understand what we had done and why. And that was just going to cause us more problems later on. So we added some deliverables. One of them was a navigation model, which separates out how a user wants to be able to navigate from how that's going to happen. You know, we know that users need to navigate by state. That can happen through contextual content, that can happen through a clickable map, that can happen through top-level navigation. We're staying agnostic at that point. That gets defined in the prototype. We're just going to decide what the user needs to do now, and we're all going to agree on that. We also added page description diagrams, which are kind of like a verbal wireframe. First, you define what goes on a page, and then you decide what's important. The key in all of this is really to do one thing at a time. You can't solve for X when you have five other variables muddying the waters, and you're never going to get non-designers on board when you're designing five things at once. I think the variables are different for each project. This is what they were for this one, but I would urge you to take a little bit of time and think in your process what the goal of each deliverable is. What variable are you defining here? And try and keep it narrow. I find that this gets the best feedback out of your stakeholders, out of your clients, because they actually understand. It keeps things approved. They don't come back up in later meetings because you're educating them about the process and about the project, and it's theirs too, instead of just convincing them. The real magic of this, I find, actually, is that the client understands it, so they can go out and explain it in their own words when you're not around. They can go talk to their boss, their employees, their colleagues, and give the explanation in their own words, which is almost invariably going to be better than your explanation for those people. And in IA, a good explanation is basically evangelism. So, phase two prototype. This felt completely different to work on. We had all of this shared precedent to build on, and I really knew what we were doing, and it was really fun to design, even though it was a huge amount of work. There was one problem. Our partners, the SharePoint implementers, were not yet on board. They did not yet completely trust us, I think. How many times have you presented a wireframe or a prototype to a developer and had them start with the five tiny details that are just flatly impossible, and how they won't do that? That happens to me, and it's always frustrating. But when it happened here, when I knew our design decisions were solid and I knew the client was on board and we were really together on all of it, it was awful. And I immediately started wanting to fight for my design. You know, my adrenaline got up and I started wanting to argue and, you know, go into that meeting and really win it. And I had to make myself take a step back. And we had to figure out how we really wanted to handle this and what our strategy was going to be. Because that might win, but it wasn't going to get us to a better final product. So we kind of rethought how we wanted to handle this, and the strategy we settled on is a kind of aggressive cooperation. So you don't let the developers do whatever they want and walk all over you, but also don't stay too tied to the last thing that you design. Be tough on the precedent and the user goals that you decided, not the last design decision. And so when it happened that, you know, I'd put something in the prototype and the developer took one look at it, oh, we can't design that kind of modal because that requires an integration with Office 365. Blah, blah, blah. I was, okay, great, modal's dead. What we really need is for users to be able to see information about where the document came from, who approved it and when, every time a document shows up. How do we make that happen? Well, if you want that to be interactive, we have to, okay. Doesn't have to be interactive. All I need is for that to show up every single time it gets used. It sounds like that's a lot simpler. How do we make that happen? What do I need to define for you right now so we can have that happen? You can do that without actually giving anything up because you know what's important. You know what your precedent is. You know, we decided that users really need to know about provenance. They need to know where these documents came from. There are probably 15 ways to make that happen. Don't always assume that you've designed the best one. Specificity is the soul of narrative. Use what you know about the specifics of an experience to tell a story, to tell that story of the user journey, the user goals, and use that to talk to your developers while staying as agnostic on the solution as you can. I think it's really easy to get into a mode of debate, especially when your design is on the line. You know, we invest ourselves in these things. And it's really easy to start trying to score points on someone else or put one over on them or get the client on your side, like you're persuading some third party and participating in that kind of thing. And I would really urge you to try to take a step back and not do that, whether you're talking to a client or a technical stakeholder, whoever you're working with. Instead, and this is a subtle difference, but really try to speak to be understood rather than to win. Tell a story. It'll work a lot better. So, how'd it go? It was a success, I think, by any measure I can come up with. I didn't know that at first. I knew that I delivered work that I was proud of, and the client was happy with it, and it was implementable, but we're consultants, so at the end of a project, you just walk away a lot of the time and you don't know what happens. It wasn't until a few months later when we were actually reaching out to Brad asking for a reference for another project that he forwarded a bunch of the emails he had gotten the first week the site rolled out. These are some of them. And without changing the content at all, we reorganized it, we applied new metadata, we moved it into a new site. But without changing the content, in the first week, in the first day, people were able to find information that had been eluding them for years in the site that they were intimately familiar with. And this also doesn't include the little addendum that Brad put on the email, which is that he had also gotten tackled in the hallway getting hugged by underwriters who were so excited about the new SharePoint, which I've never heard of before. It was pretty gratifying. And I think the upside of this is all of that. That kind of success is, I think, where you can get with this kind of discipline and this kind of focus on your process at the expense of your ego, quite frankly. The downside is that no one's going to be amazed by anything that you do. No one's going to think you're a genius or that you've come up with some brilliant new thing or be surprised by anything you've come up with. I think if you do this right, every decision you make, everything you come up with should seem inevitable. It should seem obvious and reasonable and, oh, isn't this where we should have been all along? That's a trade-off that I think is worth it. You have to decide. Personality will get you some of the way there. You might be persuasive enough and charming enough, and your idea for this end product that you come up with, it might be good. What you end up with might be great. I think if we hadn't changed anything, if we had just stuck with our original process, Brad would still have loved us. We got along very well. And the underwriters would have been happier. It was always going to be better than what they had started off with. But somebody who wasn't involved in the project wouldn't have hugged Brad in the hallway. Personality didn't do that. Process did. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast from the 2015 IA Summit, subscribe and check out the full collection at library.iasummit.org and on iTunes. The 2015 IA Summit podcasts are brought to you by the UIE All You Can Learn Library. The All You Can Learn Library will give you the skills and techniques you need for a competitive design advantage with 24/7 access to experts and UX topics. For more information, visit aycl.uie.com. That's aycl.uie.com. As always, thanks for listening.